Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoops. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will, the ill executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hampton.
RSG fam is like, woo! Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be peachy.
Don't get no more realer.
All right. Welcome. Real Sports Guys and Real Guys Talk Real Sports. RST, Renegade Radio. It's your host, Marcus, the Game Changer. 130, illustrious three-man booth. Before I introduce my cohorts, I'd first like to thank you for joining us this evening. You could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with the Renegades. We appreciate your patronage. Now, before we get into the proceedings this evening, let me introduce the other two-thirds of the illustrious three-man booth. To my right, I got my man, D. Wills. Holler at the people.
Man, I had to four-wheel drive just to get into my garage. If y'all don't know, there's a snowstorm. It was like I was climbing a mountain just to get into my garage. Thank goodness for teenagers. My daughter cleared with the snow blow if I could get prepared for the show because she wants to drive tomorrow. But, man, I can't wait for the sun. Y'all folks out there in that warm weather, send some to us in the Midwest.
Seriously, man. I feel like every other day I'm shoveling, snow blowing 2, 3, 4 inches of snow, man. I'm sick of it. I'm literally sick of it. Whatever's got to get done, we need to get it done. You know, I'm about to get a hybrid. I'm trying to reduce my carbon footprint. Whatever needs to happen, man, we need to make this thing happen, man, because I'm tired of this crazy weather. I'm sick of it. Sick of it. Man, let me jump down off this soapbox real quick and introduce my man, 100 grand, Phil T, sports PhD. What's happening, Captain?
Fellas, I'm happy to be here. It's been a while, but I got to send a shout out to all the listeners. Just look at our listening numbers, and it's just very humbling how much it's grown, and we just appreciate all those out there that check in with us each week. So thank you very much.
That's right.
Absolutely. And as always, we have another rousing, entertaining, rambunctious show in store for all the listeners out there. We're going to keep it all the way 100 tonight. We're going to have a good time. This part of the show is called The Intro to Let You Know. That's where we give you a quick rundown of all the things we do have in store for you on tonight's show. Many of we'll get to, some we'll miss. But we're going to do our best to touch base on all these topics. First off, in the funky editorial, we're going to talk about the NFL Combine, the importance of it. We're going to talk to a little man Titeo, a little honey badger, talk about some prospects that put up some good numbers and probably helped themselves, made themselves a couple hundred grand to $1 million by running well and being in good shape. We're also going to talk about the overall process and the importance of it and some of the teams, some of the reports coming out of the Combine, the teams are asking some out-of-line questions. So we're going to dig into all of that, talking about the NFL Combine. Then after that, we're gonna set up a ranking. You know, we like to rank things. We like to do lists. It creates great debate. We're gonna rank the top 10. Each of us is gonna do our top 10 NBA seasons, individual NBA seasons of all time. So we're gonna first figure out how we're gonna do this, to sort through all of it, and kind of develop the framework and let you in on that conversation as to how we want to frame this up. And then next week we're gonna hit you off with the first unveiling of our top 10, of a portion of our top 10 NBA seasons of all time. So we will be hitting y'all off with that after we talk about the NFL Combine. We're going to talk some college hoops. Again, we're in March. We're a couple of weeks away from the tournament. We're going to talk about the number one seeds and some storylines that we're interested in keeping track of as we head into this tournament. We're also going to talk about the next year, the starting of the new Big East. With the Catholic seven schools breaking off and creating a new conference, but they're still going to call it the Big East, pulling in some other schools out there. So we're going to talk about the prospects for that new conference. After that, we're going to try and get to some NBA talk. We're going to play He's All Right, But He's Not Real, to quote the great Jay-Z. We're going to talk about some contenders, and we're going to see who's all right and who's not real. We're going to get into that. That's going to be our NBA talk. We'll hit you off with the onions. And then we hit you with the dog of the week. So sit back, relax, enjoy the program. We're really going to try to keep it real fly tonight. So just hang on. As my man John L. Smith says in the intro, keep your chin up. Smile. and enjoy the program. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Yes, shall we say it, y'all? Yes, Melvin, right. Jimmy, yes, Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. This week's funky editorial, we are going to talk NFL Combine. First off, you know, there's a lot with this combine. There isn't the star power of combines usually because of this quarterback class. What I like to call the ball handling positions. I don't like the phrase skill positions because I think you have to have skill, period, to play anywhere on the field in the NFL, whether you're a D lineman or O lineman. There's a ton of skill that goes involved in that because not just anybody can get out there and do that. So I don't like to say, but the cat that handled the rock. There aren't a whole lot of big names in this particular draft, particularly at the quarterback position. So a lot of people don't view this as a sexy draft, and I'm putting that in air quotes. it's radio. It's not a sexy draft, but there is still some very intriguing storylines that have come out of the NFL Combine. One in particular that everybody was following leading up was my man Catfish Tao, as he will forever be known on the show. That's his nickname, Catfish.
Right. Just make me want to go get some hot sauce and fry up some catfish, okay?
I'm about to call JJ's right now.
That's right.
Get it right.
Exactly. So, man, Titeo, you know, we had the conversation about his draft stock and how much the whole – internet girlfriend hoax, as you observe PAZ, this whole situation brought back the term hoax.
Right. An elaborate hoax.
We talked about how it might affect his draft status. Well, you know, this past week he had to actually do some football-related things. And, you know, he ran a 40. He ran a 4.82 40, which is below average. I'll say above average because it's a higher time than he should have had. He should have had a lower time, been in about the 4.7, 4.6 range. That would have been a little bit more appealing to some of the teams for an inside linebacker. Overall, how do you think this whole process is going to affect Manti Te'o and where you see him going PhD as far as his draft stock right now? Is he a first rounder? Is he a second rounder? What do you think?
Well, I think a lot is still to be determined. He's going to have his pro day here in a few weeks. And I do believe that he will run a faster 40. How much faster, I don't know, but I think he'll have a better showing there. And honestly, there is a history of middle linebackers having phenomenal careers, not running very fast in the combine. Adversely, there's a track record of guys running 4.5s and being busts, you know, with the middle linebacker position. If there is a position on the field that you kind of do the sniff test, you know, and you let your eyes kind of lead you, middle linebacker is still that in professional football. So I feel that he'll still be a first-round pick. Because at the end of the day, there's 32 teams, and all he needs is one willing to buy him. That's it. At worst, I think he'll drop to the beginning to the mid of the second round. And, again, there's a ton of history out there of guys doing very well as second-round picks. So I'm not overly concerned about it. I think that, again, when he has his pro day in South Bend, he's going to perform better, and it's going to quell a lot of the conversation of him dropping to the third or fourth round.
Okay. Well said. That's fair enough. Now, D. Wills, I want to ask you a question about Te'o and the whole, you know, my man Catfish, the whole hoax situation. Do you think that's going to negatively – if you're a GM, how does that play into your thought process around this young man?
I mean, I'm not at all. I think that NFL scouts, GMs are some of the best folks, evaluators in some ways in professional sports. They don't get a lot of the noise. They don't mess with a lot of the noise. I think they're probably more concerned that he was catching linemen against Alabama. more concerned that, you know, trying to evaluate whether or not the front seven allow for him to play better. I think those are the things that they're going to try to figure out about him and whether or not he can play in that position. You know, the irony of it, sometimes dropping down to in a better position, you sometimes get with a better team. You get in a better locker room. And I think for him, the blessing for him may be that he might end up with one of these upper echelon teams where he has an opportunity to be mentored. And might, you know, look back and think that this actually, if he has a great career, the fact that he was able to end up in a solid locker room is going to be good for him. So that's my big thing. You know, the 40 time, I think it, you know, given that sometimes you want to keep your base defense on the field, you want to get your linebacker, you know, getting deep in coverage and to do those different things. But, you know, sometimes good film study, anticipation, a lot of linebackers are made up for some of that stuff just because they're able to read, anticipate, and get there. And so, you know, I think those are the kind of things they're going to be concerned about, judgment. And I just think that he needs to just stay out of the media right now. He's done enough. I mean, he just needs to focus on and stop explaining. You know, I think sometimes he feels like he needs to explain things. You know, he's trying to, you know, it was a tiring day, emotional day. That's the kind of stuff that might worry folks. You know, how mentally tough is he? If you think about Cam Newton and what Cam Newton went through, Cam Newton was never shook. You know, this stuff was crazy. But if you think about what Cam Newton went through and just think about how mentally focused he was through all of that, that gave you some insight to his mental toughness. You know, Manti Te'o showed some cracks. I think those are the kind of things that people look at. How is he handling pressure? They don't have to do the Wunderlich or interviews with him. You know, they're watching him under the microscope right now and seeing how does he handle that. And he's had a couple cracks there.
Far, far from it.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Tao's in a good spot. I think, like you said, if for all intents and purposes, it could be a busted in disguise that the whole hoax kind of played out, given the time that it played out. Again, as you said, it may allow him to fall into a more secure locker room. You know, he winds up with an established organization who has a winning tradition, has some vets in there to bring him in, help him get comfortable. I still think the kid can play football. Is he an unbelievable stud, you know, that's going to come in the league and do what he did in college? I don't think so. Is he going to play a 10-year career, be a solid linebacker? I bet money on it. I think he Catfish has got some good things going for him. So, you know, but I think he's going to be the star of the combine because of the whole, you know, internet fake girlfriend, invisible girl deal. overall, because this isn't, and I think Tao stands out because this isn't a QB-heavy draft, there are a lot of other things kind of swirling around this combine, a lot of trade talks. And we actually had a trade with Alex Smith going from San Francisco to Kansas City, and San Francisco picked up a bunch of picks. D-Wills, do you think San Francisco is done dealing? This is the team that was Super Bowl runner-ups, got one of the best defenses in the league. You know, I hear a name that keeps getting thrown around in Revis. They get that cat to hold down one side of the field. Cool boy. People thought it was going to be tough to deal with that defense last season. If they have some chips in play where they can make a run, do you think getting Revis is a good idea for the 49ers?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think they got a good locker room. He'll be able to come in and just, you know, fit in. I mean, I think a lot of people have been speculating how would that impact the locker room in terms of, you know, shaking up the locker room, because there's some guys that need to get paid. What's good about all those picks is that they can move some things around. I mean, they're like the 49ers of old. You know, you remember when the 49ers were the organization that knew how to manipulate the cap and do all that stuff? It seems like they're back in their groove right now. And I don't understand what Kansas City was doing. I mean, you could got Alex Smith for a bag of chips and some menudo if you would have waited. And so that tells you a lot about the 49ers' hustle and Alex's agent. But I think they're in a great spot. They can move. And the thing about this draft, you know, everybody thinks a draft is made or broken by whether or not there's a quarterback in there. And, yeah, it's good to have a sexy quarterback. But if you look throughout this draft, there's some quality football players. There's some really good football players. Those are some guys who by their second or third year might be sniffing in, you know, that all-pro range. And so there's great defensive talent in this pool. There's great linemen in this pool. You know, for people who are thinking about shoring themselves up on the, you know, I remember Jim Finks used to talk about you got to start from the inside out on both sides of the line of scrimmage to be a Super Bowl champ. Think about the team that were in the Super Bowl this year. They dominated up front. There's people that can allow you to dominate up front in this draft. So, and the 49ers are going to leverage it. 49ers going to steal. Baltimore going to steal. Steelers going to steal. The regular New England, they're going to steal in this draft. Everybody else going to be complaining.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think, you know, I think there's going to be some really good football players that come out of this draft. Right, it's not sexy, right? The names don't pop out at you. But there's going to be some good football players that come out of this draft that are going to have a major impact and going to turn around some teams and help some teams. And this is where you get a lot of those grunt guys, a lot of those pieces that you draft them and people don't remember so-and-so was the number one pick in this draft. And 10 years later, he's going to his 10th Pro Bowl, you know, and he's an all-pro for the 7th, 8th time. And then people remember, oh, he came out in 13 when there was no quarterbacks, you know.
Game changer. Look at, I mean, if you just sit here, Kenyon Barner is like, on the running backs part of this list, they got him ranked, his rating, he's like down like 12th or 15th.
Yeah.
Now, that's a quality back.
Yeah.
So you think about all the people up ahead of him. You know, people are going to sleep, but somebody going to steal somebody.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I got excited. Sorry about that, fellas. It's the cold weather.
You're hoping to see it.
You're cold weather that's doing it to you. You're indoors. It's the cold weather. I'll let you go. Game changer. Back to our regular.
Now, PAD, do you see any other potential big name? Because there's not a whole lot of quarterbacks in this draft. There's still some teams out there when you're talking about the Arizona Cardinals. When you're talking about the Eagles are kind of short of their situation, but there's some teams out there that are looking for a quarterback, that are shopping for a QB, somebody to run the show. What's the next shoe to drop as far as some of these quarterbacks out here? You know, when you talk about a Matt Flynn, are the Jets going to hang on to Sanchez? Are they going to go in a different direction? How is all, you know, Jacksonville still needs to figure it out. If anybody's interested, Tebow's available. So there's some names out there, at least, for some teams that may be interested in quarterbacks and don't want to take a gamble on some of the rookie quarterbacks that are going to be available in this draft. What's the next shoe to drop? Who do you think is going to make a move out there?
Well, I think it's so unpredictable. I do believe that Matt Flynn will find a home outside of Seattle. I think there's still enough teams out there that believe in him, because if you think about it, he really didn't get a shot this year outside of the preseason. Russell Wilson took that position. And going into the offseason, he got a big contract last year. And so I think that there still may be some value there for him. I think he'll find a home, perhaps in Jacksonville, perhaps during the draft at some point. But outside of that, I think it's the best guess for this quarterback situation. And this is what it normally is every year. I think last year we were just so spoiled with the quarterback play of younger players, and now we're kind of getting back to the norm.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of the quarterbacks in this draft, you know, quite a few of them opted not to throw at the combine. One who did was Geno Smith. Just your general take. We've had some, as you said, PhD, we've had some real good quarterbacks come into the league in the last couple of years. By all accounts, Smith doesn't seem to be at that level. But at the same time, this time last year, nobody thought Russell Wilson was going to perform the way he performed. You know, we all knew he was a good quarterback. He did some good things in college, but nobody knew he would be able to have the impact that his game would translate to the level that it has in the pros. As far as where you see Geno Smith landing, where do you think he'll land as far as his potential draft spot in that first round? And will it be a good fit?
I'm not going to answer the question. I'll tell you why. I am horrendous when it comes to projecting quarterbacks.
You're right. I remember now. I remember.
You know, Achilles Smith. I pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, I bet somebody that I'd give my right arm if this guy didn't pan out. You know, so I just instead.
You still got that arm?
I do still have an arm, but it's kind of like on layaway. I got to pay rent for it each month. But I will mention a defensive end that I'm very high on.
All right, rock out.
Again, I'm staying away from the quarterback.
He went to the defensive end. I will mention a left guard that I love.
Right. You know,
it's this punter. It's this punter out of West Virginia. I'm digging.
Right.
So the guy that puts his hand on the ground.
You guys laugh, but this is part of the program, part of the recovery program for me. Okay?
Step 10.
That's right. So this defensive end, I actually saw him play a couple of times, not this past season, but during the 2011 season. This kid's a beast. His name is Travis Chapelier. He played at Northwest Missouri State. Go ahead and laugh, but this guy's about 6'6", 270. Before the combine, people were very high on him. He did average to okay in the combine. But to me, he's kind of like a Jerry Rice type of guy where, you know, Jerry Rice ran, what, a 4.7, 4.8? The combine, we all know he's much faster than that on game day. This kid is 6'5", 270. Some sites have him at 6'6". And he's being compared to a J.J. Watt type of guy.
Okay. So that's kind of the guy you like coming out of this whole situation.
Yeah, so you asked for a quarterback. I gave you a defensive end.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll give you a quarterback that I like. I'll give you a quarterback. I like E.J. Manuel out of Florida State. He's got size. He can throw. Kid's tough. You know, had some games. He could have been, but I like he's a guy that you can tell understands the game. I think in the right system, I think this is a guy that has all the tools. And he might be better because he's not coming out with the big, you know, hoopla around him. But I like him out of this class, and I've liked the way he played, you know, over time. So I think he's been a lot – he played a major role in the resurgence of Florida State. So I like this guy a lot in this group.
Yeah, probably one day
– has anybody stock fallen more than Geno Smith? Think about – let me just say this. Think about the message about him in September and October.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It was like a tale of two seasons. Like, it was so loud. They were thinking, I mean, you thought it was the second coming. And then
yeah.
He was just like witness protection program by November. Like, he stole somebody's money.
So here's the magic. Here's the $9.99 question.
$9.99.
Love it. Love it,
man. Is it $9.99 question? Where are you at on Geno Smith? If you're buying Geno Smith stock today, you know, we tested the waters at RG3, Luck, Cam. Where are you at with Geno? Are you in or are you on the Geno bandwagon? Are you on Team Geno or are you off Team Geno? Be Will.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just going hard on him.
I'm off Team Geno, man. I'm off him at the point where they got him. If they get him early second round, I'm on him. If he goes any higher than 15, then he's out.
So give me a parallel career wise, career prospect. Give me a parallel. Well, you two, you don't think he's a great first rounder, but you think he's a solid second rounder. What does that mean? What do you think, career wise? What kind of career is Geno Smith gonna have in your eyes?
Wow.
Well, I know I'm throwing a lot at you.
Steve DeBerg, no. Yeah.
You know, Steve DeBerg played for about 30 years.
He did.
That's always good. You know,
I think he was on all the Tecmo Bowls.
All the Tecmo Bowls.
Right.
One of my favorite quarterbacks come to mind, Charlie Batch. But, you know, I'm not going to – I don't know where he's going to be. Wow, you hit me with a good one. Wow.
I can pick you up, D.
Pick me up, man.
So I think that he will be selected in the first round. And quarterbacks now, since the whole new collective bargaining agreement, they're not as much of a risk financially. You know, I mean, they have – their salaries are already figured out. You don't have to worry about paying them Sam Bradford money. You know, if it doesn't work out, you don't hamstring your organization for 5 or 6 years. So I think somebody will take them in the first round. Perhaps a team will move up to get them. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he has a career similar to Donovan McNabb or Flacco. So, and
that's a good career if he does that.
Yes. And I think the reason being is Shanahan has shown a model. He has shown a model that you don't force a quarterback to fit into your system, but you kind of unite the quarterback, what he's strong with, what he's done in college, and you implement that into your professional football system. So I think because of that, and again, you don't have to play these guys right away now because you're not paying, you know, a king's ransom for them anymore. So he may or may not play his first year, but I think when he does get on the field, especially if they want to play him right away, whatever offense he's in, it would be very prudent for that organization to change their offense to fit his strengths based on the things that he did at West Virginia.
Okay. I'm still myself. Well, I'm gonna say I'm in on Geno. I'm going to say I'm in on Geno. I think he will be a solid quarterback. I think his floor is Jason Campbell. I think his ceiling, I think if everything works out, he's a Matt Ryan type of guy, where he's not necessarily going to go out and swing the ball all over the field. He'll have his moments. But for the most part, you pair him with a solid run game, you get him some weapons, he's going to be good. He's going to be a top-tier quarterback. He may not crack into that super elite group, that upper echelon of the elites in the league, but I think he can live in that second-tier quarterback range for a good part of his career. That's his ceiling. Again, his floor is, I think he's a serviceable backup. He'll have some years where he starts, but, you know, if he doesn't pan out, I don't think he goes Jamarcus Russell, where he just disappears.
The thing that impresses me about Geno Smith, and it was the same thing that impressed me about RG3, and I'm not comparing these two, but is the accuracy. When you have a guy that's throwing 80% of his passes complete in big-time college football, to me, that's the biggest challenge for young quarterbacks, is accuracy. So that's one of the reasons why I feel like this guy could be successful.
Hey, y'all didn't hear that, though, man. My man PAC said he's accurate. The boy accurate. He's athletic.
You know, and I think if he goes high, if he goes with a projection, he might go to Arizona, then Larry Fitzgerald will help him grow. He can play. And I think in Arizona, if he goes to Arizona, that's going to be a good setup for him. Because early on, he'll have a player. You don't have to be perfect when you throw the ball to him. He's going to make plays. But he's got a better arm than anybody they've had there since, you know, they made a run to the Super Bowl. So for him, it's going to be the right team. So if he goes where he projected he'll go, I think he could be in that Matt Ryan kind of projection where y'all go. After that, I don't see any other teams that might take it. So if he doesn't go in that range, I don't know if there's any other teams after 7 that may take it. So then I think he's dropping to the second round.
Yeah.
Unless they trade down and try to get him at some other point, which they could do.
Right.
But like you said, there's no value in that. But, you know, I think he's going to be a tough one to judge just because his senior year was not what it was supposed to be.
And do you think the career arcs, just talking about quarterbacks for a moment, how much of an impact, D. Wills, do you think the career arcs of Mark Sanchez and Carson Palmer and Matt Leinart, how much do you think that's, because you talk about from September to now, draft stock and Geno Smith and how his stock has fluctuated so much. A year ago, Matt Barkley was the bee's knees. I mean, this guy was in the conversation of being one of the top three quarterbacks taken when you talk about RG3, Luck. You know, Barkley was in that conversation as one of those guys, and people were wondering whether or not he was going to come out or not. But he was viewed as one of those top quarterbacks in that, and what would have been, he would have been a last year's class if he had to come out. He stayed, came into the season with a lot of hype. That USC team had a lot of hype. They didn't perform, didn't pan out. He got hurt. Things didn't go well. And so now his stock is not what it was. And then you have, you know, former USC guys. And as much as it's not fair, I think just like with Duke guys in basketball, certain schools, certain teams, certain positions, you get a certain rap on you. You know, big white guy forwards from Duke, nobody wants that dude. Nobody expects that dude to be anything. He could be a great college player, but he's not going to make it in the pros. Some teams have that stigma. You know, back in the day, it was Steve Spurrier and those Florida quarterbacks. Video game numbers in college, but couldn't quite cut it in the league. What do you think of – how do you think the Sanchez, Leinart, Carson Palmer career arcs have affected Matt Barkley's perception?
Well, you know, the irony of it, they're one of the few teams, USC, that actually runs a pro-style offense. That's the irony of it.
So we're talking about these other quarterbacks who don't really, you know, used to run the old, what we knew was the pro-style offense. They actually do that at USC. I think the question you're going to have about USC quarterbacks is that S word that you just use for sometimes for Duke, and some of the other, soft, mental toughness issues. It's not a skill issue. It's not a skill issue for Sanchez. It's not a skill issue for Liner. It's not a skill issue. Carson Palmer might have been the one that demonstrated. He got injured. That was a big thing that came back. But he might have been the only one that demonstrated some level of toughness. But these other ones, I mean, Barkley's getting criticized about why he didn't play towards the end of the season and all this stuff around mental toughness. This whole idea, it hasn't been a skill, but I think the criticism is around toughness, ability to deal with pressure. And I don't know if that's being in Southern California all day, walking around. I don't know what that has to do with it. You know, school is near Compton. School near Compton is an urban environment. You know, you got Snoop coming down. You know, it's around you. It should be, you know, Ice Cube ain't too far away. I mean, there's something there, but they're not tough. And I think that's the biggest thing that Liner made dumb mistakes and was just weak mentally, not skill set. He wasn't into the game, didn't study, didn't focus. And so, you know, I think it is hurting him. And, he's got skill set, but that's the issue.
And for me, the whole quarterback stand in college is a double-edged sword for me. If you can go out and you're projected as a top 10 pick in any sport, I think you should take that opportunity. You know, athletic ability is a finite thing. I'm realizing that as I move into my early 30s. when it starts to go, it goes quick. And, you know, I still consider myself a young man, but I don't play ball like I did when I was 22 or 23. So the more you can get, the more you can take advantage of that skill and that blessing that you have, I say go for it. When quarterbacks decide to stay another year, like when Liner stayed, he wasn't necessarily like trying to graduate. He was taking like ballroom dancing. To me, that was in that situation, that gave me red flags. Because it's like you just won the Heisman. You're coming off a season where you competed for the national championship, and yet you're going back again. For what? What do you have to prove at this point? Your next step, the next step in your evolution is to go pro and try to continue to advance your skill set if you're that type A type of guy who's usually successful as a quarterback. I didn't see that in Liner, and I was when he decided to go back to school, I was off of him. Sam Bradford, I was a little worried about when he decided to go back. Andrew Luck, he was still kind of still in his – he was still a redshirt sophomore, so I wasn't surprised when he went back. But after your junior year, if you're projected to be at the top of the draft, you got to go. And when you don't go, it really kind of – to me, that mental toughness that you talk about, D, when you talk about a guy wanting that challenge, wanting that pressure, wanting that responsibility, you know these guys ain't doing that on these college campuses. Most of them. They're hanging out. They're kicking it. Playing a little football, living an easy life for the most part. It's an adjustment being a pro. And when guys aren't ready for that challenge, when it's their time to be ready, that gives me pause if I'm a GM, and I may stay away from that dude because he may not be ready for that pressure. Now, Sanchez guys did go when it was time for him to go, when his time was up. I just think he's a little too Hollywood for the whole situation, and you know, being in New York didn't help. I actually think if he had gone someplace where there was a little bit less of a microscope, he may have done a little bit better. He may have been able to grow up a little bit, but everything was so out there. Everything when he was so exposed, it's really hard to grow or to mature in a situation like that. That's why for all of the ugliness to Eli's game, I do give him props. That's the one piece of Eli's game that I think is impeccable, is that he knows how to handle that whole vibe, that whole situation. Being a young guy, being a quarterback of a New York football team, Eli handled that flawlessly, even through a lot of turmoil early in his career, having issues with Tiki and Strahan and those guys, kind of who was the leader, questioning his leadership style, all those things. So I think that kind of played against Sanchez. But those guys that go back, really, that raises a red flag, because I think when it's time to go, it's time to go, and you got to step up to the challenge, especially as a quarterback. And when you back away from it, you know, to me, that's a bit of a red flag. So you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Make sure you hit up the fellas at Resistance Digital to meet all your digital needs. Check them out, resistancedigital.com. Hit our man up, LR. He'll give you all the digital equipment you need at a very reasonable price. Make sure you check them out. Now, I'm going to move on. We have this this framework for this idea that we got, and we're going to lay it out for y'all. And we're going to hash out some things on there, kind of take y'all behind the curtain, how we do and how we come up with these ideas. So we're going to create, each of us is going to generate a list of our top 10 NBA individual seasons. Now, there's no joint criteria as to how we have to decide this. Again, your list is going to be your list.
That's right.
You will have to explain your rationale, and you will have to be ready to defend why you chose what you chose. Now,
right, it's like playing Tacolina. It's like playing Tacolina 21. You on your own.
Exactly.
Who remembers Tacolina? Who remembers Tacolina?
I remember that. We called it something else, but I'm not gonna say that on the radio. I don't want to lose no listenership. I want to do that. I want to find myself in that boat. But yeah, I remember that game. Totally by yourself. Got to hold it down. And so that's how this is going to go. But before we really get into it, you know, we've been having this debate and going back and forth, and we thought we should have this debate over the airwaves. We've been talking about with this list and how we're going to decide it. Should we have guys on the list multiple times? As PhD pointed out, and I'm going to let him frame it up, PhD, you were kind of saying that we shouldn't have guys be able to have multiple seasons. What was your rationale behind that suggestion?
Well, to take a step back, the season that LeBron James is having right now just really got us motivated to take a look at what are the best individual seasons in history. And my argument was that we should only limit guys to appear in the list once. Because if we looked at Wilt Chamberlain's statistics, this cat averaged over 20 rebounds 9 times in his career, I think maybe even 10. In most of those seasons, he was over 30 points. You know, if you look at that, and then you look at over a 5-year period, Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double. That would probably be your entire list, those two guys. And again, the conversation isn't about who was the most dominant player. The conversation is more about individual seasons. And I agree, if you're doing a pure list on individual seasons, yeah, have it all be a Wilt list. But then, in my opinion, it's a much less diverse conversation when we're comparing the 61-62 season for Wilt versus the 63-64 season with Wilt. So those are my thoughts.
Okay. Now, those are very valid thoughts because, again, it does kind of create an interesting dynamic when you're thinking about a guy like Wilt, who, as you said, had just a gang of ridiculous numbered seasons where he just put up ridiculous stats. D. Williams, you kind of fall on the other side of this argument. What are you thinking? What's your rebuttal?
Well, my point, as we and listeners, if you could only witness the text messages and emails that go back in these debates, somehow I wish we could bring these to life and breathe them to life. They're classic debates, well informed. So part of my thing is that
part of someone having multiple great seasons is really the essence of why some people end up in the little room with only one table and maybe four or five chairs. And it's so
now, what's
smart.
The little room? What's the little room for folks out there?
Yeah, what's the little room? Tell me.
The little room is the place where you put you have great players. You have some of the game's greatest players. But, you know, in baseball, you know, Babe Ruth is in that little room. He's in that room. There might be five other chairs in there, but you know Babe is in one of those chairs in that little room. And it's where you put the Uber elite. You know, it's like you get into the back room of the club with the private table. But, you know, when I was at the NBA All-Star Weekend way back in the day in Minneapolis, they had the upstairs where a lot of the athletes were, and then they had – Reebok had the little room for Shaq, and you had to get another thing to get that little room. And this is the people who got these Uber statistics. Obviously, I think Wilt might be in that little room, given what we talk about. So having people on it multiple times is really indicative of that Uber greatness. However, you either can do it that way, or we have to have a way, even though we do individual lists, we have to have a way to, if we're talking about one of Wilt's great seasons, to be able to create some kind of amplification that demonstrates that other greatness that he did. You know, now this was his greatest season, but this is the greatest season of these other seasons. You know, some way to kind of contextualize his greatness. So, you know what I'm saying, you could have 10, but, you know, you might, you know, yes, I'm taking Mike's greatest season, but as I'm telling you about this greatest season, he had another season that could have been there as well.
Right.
So you have to find a way to contextualize that greatness.
Let me go over Wilt's first 10 seasons in the league. 37-27, 38-27, 50-25, 44-24, 37-22, 34-23, 33-24, 24-24-8 assists, 24-24-8.5 assists. I challenge anybody to think of somebody who had stronger seasons than that had three stronger seasons than that. Anybody. I mean, if you do, great. We got four people in the top 10. I mean,
but I think you'd also contextualize that even with the times. Those are great numbers. We're not going to negate that. But I would say Nate Archibald's 72-73 season, given who he was as a point guard, were equally great. 34 points, 11.4 assists, he had 2.8 rebounds. I mean, he was doing his thing.
That's one.
When you put that. Those are great numbers, but I think you can get Shaquille when he was doing it, 29.7, 13 rebounds in the time when he was doing it in 99 and 2000. So you can start to contextualize. You can think about Jordan's 87, 88 season. I mean, there are some ways in which you can contextualize that greatness. I might not pick all those seasons.
See, the thing about Will, and I mean, everybody before, I think it was 72, 73, somewhere around there, that's when they started to keep blocks and steals.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the sad things about Russell and Wilt, specifically these two big guys, is that we have no idea, you know, if these guys average 7 blocks a game or 2 blocks a game. You know, I get really excited about one year, Akeem Olajuwon averaged 4.5 blocks a year. And, it's Kareem. The first couple years of Kareem's career, they didn't keep the block statistic. But the first year they did, which was like his fourth year, he averaged like 3 or 4 blocks. So, you know, it just makes you wonder what kind of numbers these guys put up. To me, going through this exercise, it made me really rethink my top 50 that we did last year. And, you know, surprise, surprise, this is why I had Wilt as a top player ever, the top basketball player ever. Not talking about team guy. It's tough to argue with those numbers. It is. I mean, it is like we got excited about Jordan's, you know, 31-8-8 or 7-8, whatever he had. You know, and again, great year, excellent year, awesome year. But how do you argue with 37-28? You know, I mean, I mean, this past last year, in the league, he averaged 19 rebounds. His last year in the league, 19 rebounds. This cat.
Oh. I mean, when you look at this season, what you had, the one where he had 50, 25. He had two assists. He shot 56% from the field. They said he probably averaged 4 to 5 blocks a game. That's just
right.
That's a year he scored 100 points. Those aren't even. You can't even call those video game numbers. Like, he did it for real. It'd be hard to do in a video game. I think we just have to find a way, and I'm okay with that. I think when you talk about Wilt's greatest season, we need to say, look, put this in context. This is what this guy did, and this is his greatest season, right? We got to be able to talk about that context, because true hoop heads, old school people, they're gonna blast it.
Yeah, because some of those seasons, I believe it was even the 50-point season. Don't quote me, but one of these big numbers that he had, whether it was the 44 points per game season or the 50-point game per season, he didn't get the MVP. Russell did.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And Russell came in at 15-24, I think. So, you know, I mean, even then there was an argument of most valuable isn't defined by rebounds and points, you know, so I get that. But when you're talking about individual seasons, I mean, this cat was amazing. Incredible.
Yeah, they lost game 7 by 2 points, I think, that year. That's what they were saying here, doing a little research while we watch.
I'm with that. I think it'll make for a more interesting discussion. I just think we need to put it in. We need to contextualize it, given that dominance of Will. That's it. That's all I'm saying. It makes us look for other people, but we need to contextualize that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a real rousing conversation for sure, and I can't wait. So be on the lookout for that as we get into these top 10 seasons of all time, inspired by LeBron James and the season that he's having. Man, this is going to be crazy. This is going to be some crazy list.
Can't wait.
You're listening to the Real Sports Guys. Exactly. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Now we're going to check in and talk a little college hoops. Crazy college hoops season. There have been five teams who have held the number one slot. Right now, currently, Gonzaga, the little mid-major that could, is holding down the number one spot in the NCAA for the first time ever. Ridiculous, right? Gonzaga is the sleeper darling for the last 10 years is now like the big bully on the block. All right, the big beast is Gonzaga. So Gonzaga's number one. Indiana was number one before that. I don't know who else has been number one, but there's been quite a few teams to sit on that seat. Right now, today, if you were going to give me your top four teams going into the tournament, meaning your number one seeds, who would you have on those top lines, Devon?
All right. Well, I just think they're going to play it out. The Zags would be on that list. When you have Olmec and Harris are leading in points and rebounds, and you got a 7-footer controlling things, I think, you know, they got some competition out there. But I think they'll run the table and end up with the number one seed. I think Indiana will be a number one seed. They got the most complete team, I think, on both ends of the court. I think they got quality players at every position.
only worry is that, you know, what could hurt them in the Big Ten tournament, sometimes when you watch them, guys, you probably see this, they forget that Zeller is great. There are times they'll go like 5 or 6 minutes and forget, you know, how good Zeller is. And so I think if they can keep him in the game, they're going to be good. I watched, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the Duke game the other night, but, you know, Kelly came back and just went bananas. And, you know, I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a big Duke fan, but I think watching them with Kelly on the court gives them balance. He gives them that stretch four to go with Plumlee. I think that, you know, they have a good chance of running the table there. And then Georgetown, which is kind of, I'm sitting out there. You know, I just think that, you know, they broke the streak at the Carrier Dome. It was a 38-game winning streak. You know, Otto Porter, well, he's averaging 16 points, 7 rebounds. He's got 2.5. He's just doing everything. He hit 33 versus the Q's to break the streak. You know, I think they're coming on straight. And it's about peaking towards the end of the season. They quietly, I think they won like a, you know, something like 11 straight. You know, they're quietly ending up down the stretch here and could sneak to get that other number one seed.
Okay. So let me. You got Indiana.
Yep.
Gonzaga. You had Georgetown and who else?
And Duke.
Okay. So here's my question: is how do you have Duke as a one when they aren't winning their conference?
Well, I think that, and this is what I call the Coach K thing. they will. They'll end up winning the tournament.
And wait, you know what else that means, though, right? This Coach K thing.
That Coach K thing.
Don't have facts to back this up.
Because Miami just lost to them. If Miami loses to them in ACC championship, even though they won the regular season, Duke wins the tournament, they'll get them in that number one seed. That's that Dick Vitale, all that stuff, you know. I used to go up against it, man. I used to fight against it. I ain't fighting against it. Now, am I going to pick them in the tournament? That's a different thing. You know I'm a tourney genius. You know I run my formula. You know, I got my Duke's framework for the tournament, if they always do. You know, things that knock them out of the tournament. So I'll figure out where they get knocked out. But I think they'll give them the one seed and frustrate a lot of people.
Okay. Now, PhD. I'm going
to
need you.
Let me say this. I want to say this to the game changer. They lost some games. Where are they sitting at? Number three. Right?
They got the rankings don't mean a whole lot, though.
But let's just put it like that. Duke has lost some games, and they ain't never really moved out of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Last week, and they dropped them like they stole something. That's the thing about them. They always keep Duke in the mix.
This
no
is
matter
true.
What. They got blown out by, what, 30? By 30, and they dropped maybe one slot. Two slots.
Yeah.
That's the game, man.
Yeah, and Coach K ran them that night.
He
soon as they come
like
back
they...
to campus, he opened the doors to the gym like, let's get it, folks. You already know what it is.
All right.
So, the PhD, let me get your 4-1 seed.
Well, I think Duke is on the one line. They're right now they're ranked in the top four in both the major polls. They're number one in RPI. You know, I think back to the 99-2000 Cincinnati Bearcat team led by Huggy, where they had, I mean, they were dominant the whole season, and Kenyon Martin got hurt.
Yeah.
Broke his leg, and he wasn't going to be able to play in the tournament. And they lost a game or two, but they were still clearly the top team in the country, where they got taken off the one line because the theory is, you know, kind of like Kentucky with losing Noel this year, there's not the same team without their best players. So I think it works in the opposite direction for Duke this year with getting Kelly back. And, I mean, he showcased that 36-point game against the Hurricanes this past weekend. He showcased what kind of team they are with him and the difference maker he is. So that's why I have them on the one line. Also have Indiana, Gonzaga. I think out of all the one seeds that I predict, Gonzaga is the strongest one because I don't think they're going to lose in their conference tournament, which actually starts in a couple of days. So they're probably going to end the season number one. Now, my fourth team, which is my onion I stated a few weeks ago, is Michigan State. Michigan State right now is ranked 9th or 10th in both polls. But I tell you what, I think they're going to close the Big Ten season strong this week, and I think they're going to run the table at the Big Ten tournament. And they're going to be the surprise team, especially some of these other teams actually losing their tournaments, conference tournaments. So my four are Gonzaga, Duke, Indiana, Michigan State, and I think Michigan State gets stuck in the South region, where Duke is going to be East, Indiana Midwest, and Gonzaga, of course, will stay out in the West.
Okay. All right. You hanging in with that Michigan State pick. I like the pick.
I like the nasty.
Who they finished playing? Because I was trying to follow you when you said that, and then I looked at their last few games, and that's where I fell off on it. I was trying to figure out who they finished. They got to play Wisconsin, and they got to play Northwestern.
Yeah, right. And they lost a real tough game to Blue this past weekend. But just like the SEC is, everybody knows that's the top conference in football. I think this year the Big Ten clearly takes that title in terms of being the most toughest conference in basketball this year. And I think if Michigan State runs to the tournament, it's going to be the eyeball test.
So if they win, because to win the Big Ten tournament, what, they got to win, what, three games? Something like that?
I believe it's three or four, Marcus.
I want to say it's three because they're going to have a bye.
Yeah.
But I don't know because I don't know with Nebraska what the tournament, I don't remember what the tournament format.
They'll end up, if they run the table, they'll be 5-8, or 5-3 in their last eight because they lost their last three games, right? They lost the Indiana, Ohio State, Michigan. So they got to win these next two to be in that anywhere that I thought they'd be like a 2 or 3 seed if they ran the table. But you
they
got
lost
one.
Two
that's
games and they're still ranked 10. I think it speaks to the strength of the teams they lost to. Mm-hmm. They lost the top 10 teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about the other people who are in contention above them. They would have a lot of people have to lose between 10 and. Four.
Yeah.
So that was my only thing. But it's your onion. It's your list.
and I think that happens. I think that will happen. I think, you know, some of these teams in the conference tournament will lose next week. Georgetown's going to lose. Kansas.
you about to mess with Game Changers list.
He took it back to 84. Hey.
Yo, my one seed.
You talk about a train wreck.
Yeah. We'll see.
That's an onion right there, or an investigation. All right.
My one seed. My one seed. I got Indiana, Gonzaga. KU and Georgetown. Now, Indiana, I think, is a solid team all around. I think they got a good inside-outside mix. They got shooters. They got solid ball handling. The ball handling is the one thing that bothers me a little bit, having a freshman point guard. But Oladipo is playing really well. Cody Zeller is a great college player. I think, you know, Crean can coach. He's going to do his thing. So he's going to have them in position to make some noise. Gonzaga, hats off to them. Hats off to Mark Few. He's got those kids playing well. Harris and Olenek are doing their thing. He's always got a good balance. The system works. He's got good players playing in there. Gonzaga is a team that, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they play from Goliath now. You know, they're not David anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They got to play as Goliath. They're going to have a target on their back. And they're going to have to go up against some upstart mid-major at some point when they get to that 8-9 line, after when they play that 8-9 game being a one seed. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that with the role reversal. Kansas, to me, has the best player in the country, one of the two best players in the country, guys who are playing the best basketball right now, Ben McLemore. Dude is you know, and I said this earlier, and you guys laughed at me, but he's got some James Harden in his game. But he's one of those guys, and we talk about that, how you need that one guy who can go out and get 30 for you on any given night in the tournament when other guys aren't making shots. They have that dude. I think right now he's the most talented player in college basketball. So I have Kansas in the mix. The one thing that gives me pause with Kansas about their overall prospects is Bill Self. I don't 100%. He and Roy Williams fall into the same category for me as guys who I just don't, even though they've gotten over the hump, they've won their titles, they're still guys I just don't 100% trust. You know, I always talk about good coaching, and it happens to the best, but 9 times out of 10, if you got the better roster, you should never lose as a good coach. If you got the most talent, if you're a good coach, you should never lose. And those guys, those are two guys who lose way too often when they have more talent than the other team, for my taste. My number four one seed is Georgetown. Otto Porter is a beast. I don't know if you guys have gotten to catch some of the Georgetown games. Otto Porter is a ball player. He's another guy who the last couple of games he has taken over games. He has single-handedly dominated games. While still playing team ball. He's not doing the AI at Georgetown thing where, you know, he's going back and forth with Victor Page. Take a shot. He's getting it with the flow.
Yo, I'm in my mix. Get out of my way. I'm in my mix.
Exactly.
That was AI. I'm in my mix, baby.
Exactly.
My fade is fresh. Coach John,
you know what I'm saying?
Got the
kente cloth on the shorts. That's that Georgetown swag. I like this DU team. And one of the reasons that I really like this team is the white boy, Nate Lubick. He's scoring points every now and then. Remember, Phil, we watched him. This cat went, look at the bucket.
Diversifying.
Is this the same kid?
It's all about diversity.
Is this the same kid that was a freshman when we saw him play against VCU?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw him play the other day. He was balling.
Yeah, he's still, honestly, I look at him and I think, you should have went to Wisconsin. Every time I watch him play, I'm like, man, you should have been a Badger. Like, you would have fit right in the red and white. I don't know how you wound up at Georgetown. I don't know if they had a quota. That's something they had to fill now. But so I like the Georgetown team as my number four. I'm not so keen on Duke. Again, win your conference, and then we can talk. Michigan State's a dark horse, but they're not on my radar. I got a few teams ahead of them as far as Florida, Louisville, kind of hanging out in that realm, Miami, that I would probably put in before Michigan State. So we'll see how it all plays out. But I like GU this year. I like GU every year, but this is a year where they got a squad that I really dig. This is a team that, and I'm a big GU fan and I follow closely. So. This is a Georgetown team that I've liked the most since Hibbert and Green when they had Jeff Green and Roy Hibbert there together. Speaking of Roy, man, you see a ragdoll Steph Curry.
Yeah, he got to pick on kids his own size. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect time to transition into our NBA talk for a moment. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys with SportsGuys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. We're about to play a little game we like to call He's All Right, But He's Not Real. All right, this is kind of like a pretender, contender kind of a game. I'm going to throw out an NBA team, and they're going to tell me if this team is a contender or if they all right, but they ain't real. All right? So the first team up, I'm going there right out the gate. The Clippers, D-Wills, verdict.
They all right, but they ain't real. I ain't buying that. Kool-Aid, you better put your stocks back in your sock on them. To me, they got to demonstrate that they can have a solid half-court offense.
can execute at half court. I feel like they play well when they can get out and play pace. I think they still got to work their rotations now that they got some people back. They struggle with Paul in terms of the injuries, kind of demonstrating some weaknesses. But I just feel like they need to, against some of the elite teams, they got to really be able to execute. They got to get into the rotation. And, you know, and I don't know if I trust the coach.
Well, you know I definitely don't trust him.
Chicago people hear me. Chicago people, y'all hear me.
I don't trust Vinny the Black. Okay. So he's all right, but he's not real as far as the Clippers go. Okay.
Yeah.
The Clippers. What's your verdict?
I'm with D. Wills for the same exact reasons. I'll save time and say they're not real.
Okay. So I'm gonna lead off with number two with you, the Indiana Pacers. Contenders or what?
They all right, but they not real. So if they're having some issues integrating Danny Granger back into the fold, mostly because he's
I see you dropped
back. I did. That was so difficult. I had a master plan. I really
you
did.
Eric
Gordon,
and I knew that meant you were forfeiting that plan. You had to scrap it.
You know, because I started off fast, then I slumped, and I said, you know what, I'm going to get better for the playoffs for fantasy basketball. So I picked up Bynum, picked up Eric Gordon, I picked up Granger, and I said, you know what, I'm going to have like 8 first-round picks when these guys get healthy. They didn't get healthy. I mean, I was, you know, and then Tony Parker got hurt, and I'm like, oh. But, I mean, I was just waiting, you know. All right,
who are you chasing?
It ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
With
you know, I mean,
I'm still trying
to revive myself from my meltdown last fantasy season in the finals. Your wife, game changer, outmanaged me. She outmanaged me in the finals.
She's outmanaging everybody.
Yeah.
She's a straight pop bitch of fantasy battle.
Right.
I look up and she's killing me. I'm like, I had to switch my game up. I came with the Cortion and Monroe style and Fire and Ice this week. I'm a new strategy.
All right, so D. Wills. Yeah, are the Pacers, are they contenders or are they all right, but they not real?
The Pacers are all right, but they are fake thugs and not real thugs. And I'll say it like this. They try too hard to be tough. You know, we just said a little fight they got. I saw that last year in the playoffs. They're trying to find their identity. They got all the pieces. I mean, you look at their team, they got all the pieces. They remind me of the old Portland Trailblazers, right? Fool's gold. If you look at it, they're like, damn, they got all the pieces. And then they just kill you in the end. And I don't know if they got enough to get over the top in the East. I think
would that make Roy Hibbert Kevin Duckworth?
Yeah, he's Kevin. about 100 pounds less.
There has never been a more apt comparison ever. I think that's perfect.
But you know what I'm talking about. You remember you used to watch some old Portland Trailblazers? I mean, the lineup was loaded. And you're like, why can't they get over the top? What's wrong with them? And so that's the part. They still fight for the identity. And I think, you know, what Phil T said, they're still trying to figure out their chemistry. But I just don't think they got enough to get over the top on some of those other teams.
All right. I mean, the Pacers are playing excellent defense right now. Paul George is developing well.
I love his game.
He's coming along. Yeah, I like him too. He's coming along nicely. As you said, PhD, if they can get Granger to be a little bit more Granger-ish over the rest of the season, I think that kind of puts them up a notch. But I have to go with they all right, but they not real myself. Just not quite doing it for me. I just don't see that. I just don't see it happening.
I thought you were going to turn the curl over the top on that one.
Yeah, curl just ain't.
But moving on to number three, we got the San Antonio Spurs. D. Wills, I need a verdict, brother.
They go as far. I think they're real, but they're gonna go as far as Tony Parker takes them. And Tony Parker, and then what killed them last year are these people. They got Leonard's got to step up. Danny Green's got to step up. Leonard's got to give him something. Gary Neal's got to give him something. Steven Jackson's got to give him something. Boris Diaw, DeJuan Blake. Those people have to step up. You know what you're going to get the other three. It's all going to come down to those role players stepping up in the moment. But I think you have to get them out in seven games.
Okay, okay. PAZ, where you at on the Spurs?
I'm in on them. I am. They have a formula that's worked for them. And like Devon said, Tony Parker is the key. But I tell you what, I like the way these extra parts are working and how much they've improved. You know, I mean, you look at Green, you look at Leonard, you look at Splinter. Man, I tell you what, these guys have progressed this year. So I like the Spurs. I like them to really make a run for the West this year.
Okay, okay. I'm actually on the other side of this one. I think they are right, but they're not real. And the reason being is because with this Parker injury, even before he got hurt, he was playing great ball, but he was carrying the team. Ginobili's not the Ginobili that we know. He's still a good, very good player, but he ain't, you know, Ginobili. And these other guys who I think are great during the regular season, but I think when you lock in on them for seven games, they haven't shown me anything that says that they're different than they were last year. Like, they're still spot-up shooters, they're still opportunistic slashers, and they still don't create their own looks. So then, like, I need to see that Kawhi Leonard's added something to his game that's going to allow him to not be, again, he's ahead of his scouting report. I don't know if he is yet. I have seen nothing that says that. He's still doing the same things that he did last year, which are good things. He's still playing very good basketball, don't get me wrong. But I haven't seen that next step in development as far as that added piece to his game that you like to see from a young guy that says, okay, maybe this cat's got something. Maybe he can't be more than a role player. I haven't seen that yet. And so those pieces concern me because – in a regular season, when you're playing back-to-backs and every other night at home and home and home, and all that, teams aren't scouting that hard. They aren't prepping that hard for your systems. They're giving you what the players do, but they're not prepping that hard for your systems. Once teams dig into their systems plus these younger players, then I think you start to see some limitations in their games as team in a seven-game series. And I thought that's what you saw last year. So that gives me pause with the Spurs. Moving on to the Heat, PhD, contenders, or are they all right, but they ain't real?
They are 100% real.
Yeah.
2013 definition of real. They are. And to a sidebar, I love their Harlem Shake video. The Birdman got them going. I loved it.
Yeah, if you aren't aware, then the Harlem Shake, and just tell a little sidebar story. I stumbled upon this a couple of weeks ago, this whole Harlem Shake phenomenon. And, you know, we came up, me and PhD in particular, with a different Harlem Shake.
That's right.
So, you know, my daughter was telling me about it, and I'm like, oh, I know what the Harlem Shake. I felt like an old man, honestly, I swear. After I figured out what it was, I felt like I was having a conversation that my mom had with me at some point when I was younger. Like when MC had when Can't Touch This came on, and my mom was like, "Oh, what's this, Super Freak?" No, mom, it's MC Hammer.
Right.
Oh, you know, when you had that moment where it's like, I thought I knew what that was. That is not what I grew up with. So that's how it was. Man, I'm like, oh, I know what the Harlem Shake is. That ain't nothing. And then I'm watching the videos, and I'm like, this ain't no Harlem Shake. What is this? And so, you know, it's this new craze that's sweeping college campuses and offices. cubicles all over the country. You know, you got one cat dancing. Everybody else is going about their business, doing their daily work. Got on the mask. The beat drops, and then all heck breaks loose. I mean,
right.
Complete total chaos. So the Miami Heat did one, and it's the best one I've seen. And I've seen quite a few because, you know, I really dug into this whole thing. I was like, man, how popular is this? And I found out
yeah.
It's very popular. But the Heat did a great job with theirs. You know, you got LeBron dressed up as the king, Mario Chalmers in a Super Mario outfit, D-Wade with the Kanye teddy bear head on.
Right.
That
Mario
really
had
the
Super Mario. Mario Chalmers
yeah.
had the Super Mario outfit on.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Morris Cole looked like he had on like some hammer pants and like an old TLC throwaway outfit. It was great. It was great to see those dudes in full effect and having a good time, man. And that looks like a fun bunch. So you got them as real as it gets. D. Wills, where are you at on the Heat?
They're real. I'll keep it quick. If they're not real, nobody else is real.
I'm going with real too. I mean, this squad is they're rolling, man. I mean, they're in that 93-94 Bulls mode where they're just kind of getting it done, man. They're just kind of getting it done on a night-in, night-out basis. And right now they're really starting to hit at all cylinders. D-Wade kind of had a slow start to the season, but, man, he's getting it going.
93-94 Bulls? I mean, that's the Q Coach Pippen Bulls.
93-94? The
92-93. Game changer.
My bad.
Game changer. Wow. I think less of you now. I do.
I can live with that. I can own my mistakes.
That's the Scottie Pippen. You know, I'm not coming out of the timeout Bulls. I mean, that's the Pete Myers. That's the Pete Myers Bulls. Wow.
Hey, don't hate on Pete Myers. Don't hate on Pete Myers. Somebody had to play the two guard. Somebody had to play the two spot. Nobody wanted that job.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
No, seriously, that's like trying to date Beyonce after her and Jay get a divorce or something. Nobody wants that job. Nobody. All right. So we got two more. All right. Oklahoma City Thunder. PhD.
This was the toughest one for me because I think it still remains to be seen. Well, I guess you can make the argument for all these teams, but to me, they have not replaced Harden. And Kevin Martin earlier in the season was putting up pretty good scoring numbers. He's kind of been in a slump recently, and I know this so intimately because he's on my fantasy team. And you know, to me, if you look at last year, Harden did the same thing. He slumped a lot throughout the season. So to me, it's all – but it could be a trade-off because I like the way Ibaka's been playing. And so,
yeah, Ibaka's been playing well. I have him on my team.
Right. So I will say that they are contenders because they have two of the best 10 players in the NBA in KD and Westbrook.
Okay. D. Wills?
I think they're contenders. I mean, your list isn't very long. Their biggest thing is, you know, managing their turnovers and continue to have a backup in offense. And I would say Durant has got to continue to mix his game up. You know, they can't, against when they get to the finals of the Western Conference and the finals, if they get there, it's going to be elite defenses. That means that, you know, they're going to have to variety of ways of scoring, and Brooks hasn't demonstrated that he can get, in those playoff times, variety to the offense. But they've shown flashes of it, I think, this year. So Durant's got to score from – he's got to find easy baskets closer to the hoop in crunch time. That's their big thing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in on the Thunder. I think out of the Western Conference teams, I like them the most.
they have the experience. They kind of have that jaded chip on the shoulder mentality going, where it's like, we were here last year, we got unfinished business. So they have that kind of angle working for them. The one concern that I do have, and then they made a move at the break, at the deadline, to kind of cure this or address this particular issue, rather, was the lack of a strong 6'6", another wing defender. And picking up Ronnie Brewer from New York was, again, one of those, not really a big splash trade deadline move, but a very savvy move by Sam Presti, because they needed someone else who could help out Cephalosha and be able to guard a D-Wade and LeBron and take some of that pressure off of KD, because Kevin Martin is not going to get it done defensively against those caliber wing players in the playoffs. And God forbid they draw the Lakers in the first round, because they don't really have an answer for Kobe outside of Cephalosha. And, you know, he's limited offensively, even though he's playing efficient basketball right now. Last but not least, the New York Knicks, D. Wills. They're pretenders. I think they got all the pieces. I just think because of just trying to put those parts together, you know, I think they'll make a run, but I just think that, you know, they are maybe a year away. You know, I think even though they've had the Heat's number a little bit, I just think in the seventh game series, they don't have enough. It's going to come down to what Carmelo and them do on defense. And I'm still not sold on the fact that they committed to defense.
Okay. PAZ, where are you at with the Knicks?
I think they're contenders. I think they're clearly the second best team in the East, and I believe that, assuming they don't fall down to the 4 seed, they're going to see the Heat in the finals of the conference finals. And the Knicks are old, but the playoffs are set up to feed into that oldness with a day or two off in between games. So I think you're going to see some big minutes from some of these older guys. And I think Woodson's doing it right. He's saving Amari for the playoffs. And he's taking a lot of heat right now, but I think that this team is going to make a run in the playoffs, and they're going to give the Heat everything that they can handle.
Okay. With the squad for me is a team that I'm not super high on. I just feel like the age is catching up with them. Some of those older players that were playing more efficient basketball earlier in the season are starting to break down a little bit. Houston is trying to rest them. I just don't think that they get it back on track in time. They rely too much on the three. I don't think it's going to happen. So that's where we're at as we finish up. We got to hit you off with our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. I'm going to pass to my man D. Wills. We got about 90 seconds. Let's knock these out real quick. It's easy. Brittany Griner, 50 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, Woo. 2 blocks. That's it.
One drop step dunk.
And a big dunk for the people.
PhD, dog of the week.
Brittany Griner, amazing, but I'm going to go with Joakim Noah. Triple double against Philly last week, 23 points, 21 rebounds, and 11 blocks. Wow.
Okay. D. Wills, you kind of snatched my dog of the week, and Brittany Griner. I'm going to have to double down on Griner. 50-point, ridiculous drop step dunk. We've said it on this show numerous times. We've said it over text numerous times. She is the Luau Cinder.
That's right.
Basketball thing. Unbelievable athlete. You know, I was on Yahoo Sports earlier today, and I asked the question, could she play in the NBA? No, she could not, but she's still a great talent nonetheless. Like, just stop doing that. Like, don't do that. She's good in her own right. Let her be good in her own right. You don't have to play with the guys to be good. All right? But excellent player. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Thank you for joining us this week. Just knocked out another show, fellas. Tip my hat to you guys, holding it down.
listeners out there, thank you for listening. Make sure you check us out next week. Hit us up at realsportsguys.com. Make sure you download the podcast. Get it set up so it goes straight to your iTunes. All right? Be blessed. Peace.